Layoffs at both a gaming media publication and a major game studio show that working in the industry still sucks. Plus, a long-running site for game translations and modifications was taken offline by its founder. Tonight is August 4th, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bobby? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Pod culture called it doomsday. That's got to be how it feels. Working in this industry, working in the gaming industry, it is not a fun time. Hello, everybody, and welcome to, I guess, not a fun episode. I mean, when's the good news start? Of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on Twitch, thank you so much for being here, even if you don't have anything witty to say. Thank you so much. You being here is great. We do tape the show live almost each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us. Interact with the show directly, and I'll be trying to read some intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. But we do have a Discord server for those times during the week, so you can go over to vognetwork.com/discord to get into that and be able to talk with us and suggest stories for future episodes or comment about things that have been in the past episodes. That's how you can interact with us there. So we'd love to see you there. It's a very low traffic server. We don't ping you. I don't think other people can ping you. So maybe you can come join us there. So let's go ahead and I hate this part of the shows because we've been doing it way too much in the past couple of years, essentially, since 2022. It seems every single week I have more people losing jobs in the game industry, and what's happening is we're having a talent drain in the industry where people are deciding that they value stability in their life, and there is stability elsewhere rather than creating the video games that we know and love. And or working tangentially in the industry as well, which is the first place we're going to be going tonight. And it's a magazine. The last standing video game magazine in the United States is no more. Kotaku reports that Game Informer is officially dead and GameStop killed it. So remember, GameStop is the meme stock. It's the stock that everybody's buying. It's the stock. They've pumped so much money into GameStop, and GameStop's like, yeah, we can't afford to run a magazine anymore. It began publishing in 1991 and has been one of the last remaining physical gaming magazines in the world, with cover stories that continue to share deep dives and exclusive interviews on the biggest games coming out, from Final Fantasy VII Rebirth to Star Wars Outlaws. There are still magazines from the UK. There are several magazines out of the UK, even ones that cover like retro gaming stuff. So it's even not just current stuff. So periodicals are still valuable elsewhere, but maybe not here. And this is what we didn't see coming, because I saw a comment somewhere about this where like librarians and stuff, with the rise of e-readers, you know, like your Amazon Kindles and other e-readers like that, and e-books, they were like, this is going to kill books. People aren't going to read books anymore. It didn't kill books. People still read books. People still buy books in physical form. What it killed were the periodicals. People don't read periodicals. That's what the internet killed, were newspapers and magazines. Books are fine. Staff at the magazine, which also publishes a website, weekly podcast, and online video documentaries about game studios and developers, were all called into a meeting on Friday with parent company GameStop's VP of HR. In it, they were told that the publication was closing immediately. They were all laid off and would begin receiving severance terms. At least one staffer was in the middle of a work trip when the team was told. The sudden closure of Game Informer means that issue number 367, the outlet's Dragon Age The Veil Guard cover story, or Veil Guard, Veil Guard. I'm in a Doctor Who mindset. The Veil Guard cover story will be its last. The entire website has been taken offline as well. The Game Informer Twitter account posted the following statement, which I am not going to read, because the reason I'm not going to read the statement verbatim, because normally I do, it's because if they decided that they didn't need to have a human, they didn't care enough to have a human write those words, then they don't deserve having a human like me read those words. It's pretty obvious that the closure statement that they put out on social media to announce the closure of Game Informer was written by ChatGPT. And there are two reasons why we believe that. It's because, A, if you take the text that they had and you put it in one of these, like, is this AI? It's 100% AI, according to that. But if you don't trust that, which you might not, if you go to ChatGPT and give it a prompt to, say, write a farewell letter, blah, 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 it spits out almost the exact same copy. And if you know how if you don't know how ChatGPT works, you might be like, well, it was trained on what Game Informer put out. No, ChatGPT is loaded on data from months ago. Like, stuff that was posted today, yesterday or the day before on Twitter isn't loaded into ChatGPT's database yet. So it came up with the same thing. And I think there's like the phrase pixelated adventures. We took you through pixelated adventures to this. And I'm like, that's a ChatGPT. E3 Vale says, are we getting discounts or refunds for GameStop Power Up Rewards membership? Of course not. Of course you're not. Redertainment says, not giving notice and sending out a notice written by AI. Okay, that's straight up hogwash. People deserve better than this hogwash. If people and workers in this industry have deserved better than a lot of this. Game Informer magazine content director Kyle Hilliard says, quote, a frustrating turn of events considering we were about 70% done with the next issue and it was going to have a great cover. I'm furious about the end of Game Informer, unquote, which was another video producer. Ben Hansen says, quote, it was an incredible 33-year run and then GameStop pumps out this phony, empty farewell message. I'd bet money it was written by AI. You, GameStop, and a... you to Ryan Cohen. So Ryan Cohen is the CEO of GameStop. Every URL for the Game Informer website now redirects to the official statement, erasing more than a decade of articles, reviews, and original reports that helped establish a record of the notoriously secretive and volatile game industry. A recent in-depth feature on the retro game studio Digital Eclipse about gaming's history and preservation is one of the stories that is no longer accessible. A story about preservation no longer accessible. A write-up about Game Informer's infamous Game Fault containing releases from across its decade of history is also inaccessible. So Game Informer was actually big on the gaming preservation side. What happens now? Because Game Informer is no more. So here's the conundrum for me. How many of us actually like read Game Informer or subscribe to Game Informer? I'm putting my hand down because I did not. Did I take in Game Informer content on the web? No, I did not. So, like, maybe there's a point. Like, maybe, people like me weren't going to Game Informer, and that's why they couldn't keep it going. And Mike Deff does say, that tweet GameStop made with the closure of the Xbox 360 marketplace and them doing this was one of the worst time tweets ever. Yeah, so GameStop actually put out a tweet when the Xbox 360 marketplace closed that said, bet you wish you had physical media now, huh? Ethereal says, I stopped reading once they went digital with subscription. And so a lot of people stopped reading. Like, I believe, like, GameStop also did things to Game Informer that made it harder for people to subscribe. Because for the longest time, you could not get a subscription to Game Informer magazine. the only way you could get it is through the GameStop Power Up Rewards program, but you could not get your own subscription just to Game Informer. And they finally got that a couple months ago. So now they're going to have to give refunds because people bought a year's subscription and it's no longer there anymore. But I do understand that they did a lot of good work, and especially because they were trusted. Because I don't know if you've noticed this, but the game industry, if the person working in the game industry high up is smart, they keep their mouth shut. And the reason they keep their mouth shut is because we have so many people who are not journalists picking apart every single word somebody says anywhere and twisting it. And Game Informer still had people who you might not have considered them great journalists, but they were trained as journalists. They went to school for journalism or whatever. And you may still not appreciate what they brought to the table, and that's fine. But Game Informer still had that professionalism that a lot of other outlets today don't have. And so they were trusted with these cover stories about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. You know, a Japanese video game company trusted Game Informer to be able to do things about, do stories about their upcoming game. And we've lost that outlet. Who are they going to trust now? Who should they trust now? Are they going to trust a YouTuber? Because that's where a lot of this has gone. It's gone, like, and, you know, I'm including me. Like, are they going to trust me? Why should they trust me? I didn't go to school for journalism. I never considered myself a journalist. I consider myself a commentator. Mike Def says they should trust Vogue. But why? Like, nobody here at Vogue went to school for journalism. There are no more real professional outlets for them to go to for this stuff. S. Jaron Matt says, I wasn't going to Game Informer. I used to buy their magazines every once in a while. Probably the last time I got it was in the airport or something waiting for a flight. The only time I ever got Game Informer was when I used to go to E3 and I would pick up every single magazine that was there because there were like 20 of them and you would get free issues. And then I wound up recycling a lot of those. Questbuster says, I subscribed to Game Informer a long time ago and appreciate its articles, but as the internet grew up over those years, that became my news source. Still, I visited their site from time to time for their articles because they could be smart and well-written. Once again, the people at Game Informer, whether you liked them or not, most likely went to school for journalism. And Game Informer launched a lot of careers of people that eventually went into your favorite YouTube personalities. You know, there was somebody that I know that, like, then was at Giant Bomb for a long time. Got their start at Game Informer. There were a lot of people that started at Game Informer and then went into the YouTuber internet side, but they cut their teeth at Game Informer because it was more traditional. It was one of the last traditional gaming outlets that we had. Redertainment says, have I read Game Informer recently? No. Do I think people should be treated better than this? Absolutely. Questbuster says, and like many big magazines, their layouts were splashes of color and information, and what I felt to be enthusiasm on reporting on games in general expressed on each page. I don't know what their previous print copies were like, but that's how I remembered my time with the magazine. And E3VL says, people online care more about personality and influencer opinion culture than facts. And see, here's the thing. A lot of the influencers out there don't have journalistic integrity. And this is something that came up recently because a game developer tweeted about this because they wanted more traditional things. They wanted more traditional coverage, and so they didn't get that coverage. And the reason they were like, I'm not getting that coverage is because everybody they wanted to cover their game wanted them to pay. And they're like, I'm not paying you to review my game. But they were looking at it from a traditional mindset where you were, you know, giving a copy of the game so they would review it. But nowadays, it's airtime. You are buying a commercial. So if you see a sponsored stream for a game, you are not watching a critique of the game. you are watching a commercial for the game. It just happens to be one of your favorite streamers that is providing the commercial. And some agreements, and these have come out, have said if you, you know, if we pay you, you cannot disparage our game. It is a commercial. It is not a review. Now, a lot of influencers will buy the game themselves and not be under any of those things. So then it's not paid placement. Then you can consider it more of a critique. But it's a critique from an influencer's point of view. And I'm not saying all influencers are bad, and I say that because I know I am technically one of them, and I do not consider myself bad. But I also don't review games anymore. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. I always call them impressions. Every time I talk about a new game, I say, these are my impressions of the game. I never say this is my review of the game. I haven't for about 10 years. We used to do reviews on Vogue. We had like a letter grade scale and everything. It was great. We used to get free copies of stuff. We were on mailing lists. For things, I was on Activision's mailing list, got all of Activision's games. It was great. But that's not who we are now. And traditional outlets like Game Informer are all gone. And the game industry has learned to shut up. Because if they say anything or hint at anything that might be upsetting, your game's toast. And unfortunately, our influencer culture, in order to get clicks, are going to really scrutinize that. I mean, we see that whenever they release a trailer, which they know this happens now. Whenever you release a trailer of something, it can be like a 45-second trailer. There will be multiple three-hour YouTubes going through literally each frame of the trailer and dissecting every single pixel on the screen. And that is what seemingly the audience wants, because whenever you have honest critique, if that critique angers someone or does not match the sensibilities of the person reading it, then there is anger toward that person. And that's why a lot of people that used to be in gaming journalism now work in the gaming industry or just work elsewhere and not in media. Because y'all won. And I say you in the general sense, not the people that are in my chat room, but y'all won. Y'all successfully bullied them out because you didn't agree with their review. And it is kind of interesting how, like, what I will do sometimes is I will watch an IGN review, a video review of a game, an IGN review. And 9 times out of 10, the comment section is, wow, this isn't a bad review like IGN's normal reviews and blah, blah, blah. Like saying like, oh, this is the outlier. 9 times out of 10, they always call the review that they're on an outlier of how IGN usually reviews games. Because that's the narrative that influencers and YouTubers and people that do the same thing I do, that's what we have trained people to think. Is like, well, IGN, they're biased against your favorite stuff. And then when they're not, oh, that's a one-off. That's one, you know, that's stop clocks right twice a day, you know, things like that. When that's like the majority of the reviews I watch, those are the comments. It's like, oh, yeah, they got it right this one time, but usually they're bad. It's sad that GameStop was not prepared to allow a traditional outlet to continue to exist. And I will tell you that I read something because somebody said, and, you know, obviously this is on social media, so obviously everything is true. But, like, I can understand if somebody actually has this opinion that, you know, because GameStop is the meme stock, right? And a lot of people own GameStop stock. And people are like, wow, what must they think? And they're like, actually, this is good because this eliminating something like Game Informer just means that profits go up. Because there's not as much expenditure. So this is actually good for the stockholders. All the meme stocks, people that bought it as a meme to mess with Wall Street, they're actually like, actually the stock price is going to go up. Because it usually does. Because you're lowering your expenditures. And that means that even if you don't sell more, now like the profit margin is bigger. because you lowered your expenditures. There's two ways to get it to happen. You can either raise how much money you make, or you could lower how much money goes out. Either of those work and please the stockholders. Redertainment says, I've learned, unfortunately, that if we unfortunately learn anything from Twitter, it's that hatred drives interacting with the content. Yes, and I've actually hated that for a while because, like, I have literally been told before about me being a content creator. I have actually had one person. This was literally just one person. So it's not like two people have told me this or three. One person said, yeah, the reason you're not more popular, Bobby Blackwolf, is because you're not angry enough. Because they listen and they're like, you're too positive about the gaming industry. That's why you're not popular. You got to be more like the angry video game nerd. You got to be more like, you know, you got to be more like the people that yell and pound their fist, because that's what drives clicks. And I mean, and unfortunately, as Redertainment says, that person was right. I just decided long ago that I was okay not being as popular. Because Questbuster says, I'm so tired of angry. I am also tired of angry. But guess what? The majority of people consuming content like this, they want angry. They want, because they believe, again, I've also been told this, that if I am not angry, then I am obviously censoring my true feelings. And if I am not cursing every other sentence, then I am not being real. And frankly, like, when I have been angry those couple times, those are the times people remember. Because that's what gets clipped. That's what gets, you know, passed around, is when I'm actually upset about something. And E3VL even says, yeah, if you're not angry, you must be a shill. Which I don't think he's saying that about me, but, like, in general, like, that's what people are thinking, is that, you know, if you're not angry, you're obviously just a shill. I'm a shill for the game industry. Because I'm not constantly angry about everything that the game industry does. Tireclaw says there's a lot of YouTube channels that are farming negativity. And they're able to do that because guess what? That's what the algorithms on these websites, that's what they show. Because that gets you, if you are angered, you might comment, which drives interaction. And then you may go back to that video to see other people replying to your comment. And so that makes everybody a lot of money. Because remember, this is a capitalist society. It's all about making money. So thankfully, that's why, you know, I don't normally look at the number, but I mean, I can tell you right now that that's why only 22 people are watching this on Twitch. It's because I'm not screaming mad and angry. If I was screaming mad and angry, we might have, you know, double that number, but I'm not. And you know what? I'm totally fine with that. So the main thing also that sucks about this is that Game Informer just wiped all of their archives. I don't think they wiped all the archives. I believe they still exist. But they are no longer accessible to the internet. So all these people that they just laid off, their entire body of work is gone. The Internet Archive has a lot of it, so like, it's not gone, but you have to go to Web Archive and look for things that way to be able to find things. But even stuff like that they put out just last week, it's gone. Or just last month, like the big, you know, they worked months on with Digital Eclipse to put out a story, it's gone. You won't see it anymore. It's done. So that kind of sucks. Like, I kind of wish they had done, you know, or are working on something to preserve that archive, especially because they do a lot about game preservation, or did. But, you know, GameStop doesn't necessarily want to preserve games. They want to sell games. So that big archive, who knows? You may be able to buy part of the Game Informer archive because, like I said, GameStop's not in the business of preserving anything. They're in the business of selling. Unfortunately, it's not the only place that layoffs happened. And this apparently was inevitable, according to some people. But The Verge reports that another round of layoffs has hit Bungie. Bungie CEO Pete Parsons made the announcement on the studio's website, citing the increasing cost of development and economic conditions are the reason for the reduction of staff, a refrain that's become common in the last 2 years of prolific video game industry layoffs. Parsons wrote that 220 roles would be eliminated, representing 17% of the company's workforce. Additionally, Parsons wrote that Bungie was working to integrate another 155 employees into other departments within Sony Interactive Entertainment. Those numbers, combined with the 100 people laid off in October of last year, mean that Bungie has lost roughly 40% of its total workforce in the last 12 months. Bungie had around 1,200 employees last year before 100 people were laid off amid a delay in the big Destiny 2, The Final Shape expansion. This latest layoff announcement was accompanied by the news that Bungie employees were working on a new game. Except, Parsons wrote, quote, "We are working with PlayStation Studios leadership to spin out one of our incubation projects, an action game set in a brand new science fantasy universe, to form a new studio within PlayStation Studios to continue its promising development," unquote. Parsons offered an explanation for all the news, stating that Bungie grew too quickly and spread its leadership team too thin among its many projects. This had a knock-on effect with the studio's known projects, resulting in what Parsons called a quality miss with Destiny 2's Lightfall expansion and the delay of its next game, Marathon. He wrote, quote, "We were overly ambitious, our financial safety margins were subsequently exceeded, and we began running in the red," unquote. Parsons wrote that Bungie will continue to focus on Destiny 2 and Marathon. Says, quote, "We still have over 850 team members building Destiny and Marathon, and we will continue to build amazing experiences that exceed our players' expectations," unquote. And one of the things that I did hear is that among these layoffs were higher level people. It wasn't just the people at the bottom of the totem pole. It was people near the top. Not Pete Parsons, but there were other people in management roles that were let go in this round of layoffs. And there was something else, and it's not in this story, but they basically said this was inevitable in the sense that no matter how well the last Destiny 2 expansion sold, this was going to happen. And what happened in a lot of tech industry is when we were all forced to stay home in 2020, we started buying a lot more stuff that used technology. And so companies were like, ooh, we need to build more things and we need to get on this and we need to sell things. And so a lot of companies hired a lot of people in 2020 and 2021. And then you reap what you sow. And at some point, what goes up must come down. And so starting in 2022, they realized, as people were allowed to, people were always, let's be honest, in America, people were always allowed to leave their homes after about 6 months. But as more and more people left their homes and didn't spend all their time on technology like they did in 2020, less demand. And therefore, they needed to do something because they grew too fast. And a lot of tech companies did this. And out of necessity, the demand very much outweighed the supply. And now the supply very much outweighs the demand for a lot of things. People aren't buying, people in general aren't buying more video games. People in general aren't buying more tech products that help them do things at home because they're trying to leave home now. They're trying to do other things. Questbuster says, the line is going to keep going up, but the pandemic won't last forever. Up, it's going up, up, up. Yes, it is. It was, and now it's not. And this is why, that is the main reason a lot of tech companies have been laying people off for the past 2 years, is because they thought they could make that line keep going up, 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 and it didn't. But also, know that it is not our job as consumers to keep companies in business. And that's the other thing, because what they will try to tell you is, well, if more of you bought Destiny 2, this and this, this would have been, no, it's not our job to do that. It's the job of the managers, and it's the job of the people that are doing that to make sure that they future-proof themselves. And unfortunately, especially as you get bigger, which is why when we talk about like a video game crash, I say it's going to be a video game crash of the AAA studios, not necessarily the indies, even though we do every once in a while hear about layoffs at indie. We covered Humble Games Publishing just last week. But the AAA studios are mostly owned by are publicly owned. And so their shareholders demand short-term growth. And short-term growth can be many times done at the expense of long-term growth. And constant growth is unsustainable. And everybody knows this. And that's why for a lot of people that are, you know, have skin in this game in terms of like financial investment, a lot of them know that I need to ride this and then I need to sell high to someone else and somebody else can handle the drop off because there is going to be a drop off. SJR Matt says the cost to make and maintain these games have gotten more expensive. Yes, because the hardware has gotten better and we have demanded more. We as consumers have demanded more from them. If you're going to make us pay $70 for a game, it needs to have the greatest graphics imaginable and have a 40-hour story. If, you know, or maybe 40 hours isn't even enough. It may need to be more than 40 hours. But we've placed so many things, and, you know, so that means they've got to have a, you know, $700 to $800 million budget. And then we're like, ah, this sucks. And so that's why I think that the AAA games, that's where we're going to see some kind of crash because we just can't afford to make the AAA games anymore. Either EBL says microtransactions and live service is going to be their downfall. Here's the thing. Here's the sad part. Because we would like that for to be their downfall. But the reality is the most successful money-making video games on the market, they are that successful because of microtransactions and being a live service. That is why they are financially successful. If they were not heavy in microtransactions and heavy in live service, they would not be as financially successful. Like, Baldur's Gate 3 is great, because and everybody loves it because it's a $70 game and that's it. There are no microtransactions, there's no live service or anything, and Baldur's Gate 3 did great. Baldur's Gate 3 did not come anywhere close to the amount of money that EAFC 24 made. Because EAFC 24 has all the microtransactions, the ultimate team. Baldur's Gate 3 did not come close financially to what EAFC 24 made. Redertainment says Grand Theft Auto 5 may take a ton of money because of the online service of GTA Online. Grand Theft Auto 5, very successful, but if it was just Grand Theft Auto 5 and it was just that game that they re-released multiple times, it would not have made as much money as it does being an online service like GTA Online. Questbuster says Zenless Zone Zero, a game I have never heard of, but this is why. We're about to find out why I've never heard of this, was estimated to have probably made $100 million in 1 month when it launched. It's a gacha game on mobiles, but it also has a PC client, and you can bet some developers are salivating over how to make that work for their titles. The Breakman says, I like DLC and being able to buy stupid crap from my fake characters. A lot of other people do, too. I just spent $3 to put stupid cat ears on my Halo character, and I have no regrets. That is why microtransactions are not going to be the downfall of the industry, because the majority of gamers in general are more like Breakman. In general, speaking in generalities, the consumer has spoken that we like microtransactions. We like live service games. World of Warcraft is a live service game. Final Fantasy XIV Online is a live service game. I bet the majority of you play one of those two games or have played one of those two games in the recent past or in the distant past. Mike Def says it's funny because it's not the first gacha game that does it. I mean, you got to realize, like, Genshin Impact is a gacha game, and it's got launchers everywhere. And Questbuster even says Genshin Impact and Honkai Star Rail both do it along with many others. You know, so you can play those mobile gacha games on PC. And, you know, even I've played Genshin Impact. I've never given them a cent because I got to the point where there's a stealth mission about a couple hours into Genshin Impact, and there's a stealth mission through, like, a cathedral or something, and that's when I stopped playing. And there was no gotcha ability to just skip that stealth mission, so I stopped playing. The Breakman is like me in this sense. I tried Final Fantasy XIV, and I would like it, but I just don't have the time to invest to make the monetary investment worthwhile. And that's why I don't. That's why I don't have Final Fantasy XIV anymore. Is because if I'm paying a monthly fee for one game, I really feel bad. Like in my brain, I feel bad if I play any other game because I'm paying a monthly fee for this one game, so I should be playing this one game. So that is why they're having to lay off so many people, is because it turns out once we could go back outside and once we could go back, you know, if we had entertainment dollars, once we could go back to concerts, once we could go back to the movie theaters, once we could go back to doing other things, games at home were not really what a lot of people were doing. Your hardcore audience is still there. But the temporary peak of people buying a Nintendo Switch to play Animal Crossing New Horizons in summer of 2020, they're not playing Nintendo Switch anymore. They got it. Now they can go outside and go do their normal things. Something else is also no longer with us, and it's not for the reasons that you think. And it's kind of funny. I had to be very careful in how I like phrase this, because this is in like the Twitch stream, you know, like the title and like the title of the podcast. I've got to be very careful with how I say it because I don't want people to be like, you're promoting hacking and piracy and stuff. But I do want to talk about a very influential site for game translations and stuff that is no longer around. Polygon reports that romhacking.net, a longtime resource for the video game fan translations and homegrown fixes for classic games, is shutting down operations, the site administrator said Thursday. The site's database, including all files and images, have been transferred to the Internet Archive for preservation. So already, romhacking is doing something better than Game Informer. Already, we're happier. We're still not happy, but you know, in a sense of like we're negative 10 happiness about Game Informer closing. We're kind of like at a negative 9 about ROM hacking. It's a little bit better, but it's still negative. The romhacking.net website is a rich resource for post-release hacks and patches for software, particularly for games that never received localizations outside of their native language. In recent years, they've written about fan translations for games like the Super Famicom role-playing game Sailor Moon, Another Story, the Neon Genesis Evangelion Tamagotchi-like for Wonderswan, and the Samurai Showdown RPG, all of which were only available in their original Japanese until fans stepped in. You know, there's also, like, you know, Mother 3 is there. The site is also a font of bug fixes for classic games. In 2020, a romhacking.net user uploaded a patch for a Super Mario 64 graphics bug that Nintendo itself never fixed. Romhacking.net hosts thousands of such fixes, hacks, and tweaks that alter games to personal taste, letting players enjoy oft-improved versions of classic games. The site's Data Crystal Wiki is also a robust source of information on how to hack game ROMs for multiple platforms. The site's administrator, who goes by the alias Nightcrawler, said in a forum post on romhacking.net that all its submissions of ROM hacks have been closed, that the website will remain up in read-only format. Once again, doing better than Game Informer, which just shut everything down. So now, if our happiness about Game Informer closing is negative 10, romhacking.net is now at negative 8. We're keeping score here because we're gamers. The site's forum will remain active as well, but with submissions closed on other operations shuttered, it's likely that members of the forum will move on to other destinations. I mean, hey, at least they still had forums. Nightcrawler says, quote, it's been a good 20-year run, but for various reasons, it's time to wind things down. The site achieved almost everything it was set out to do and far exceeded it. We joined hacking and translation communities together for the first time ever. We outlasted and eclipsed ROM hacking sites that came before us. We bought ROM hacking from niche and fragmented to global and centralized. No doubt this site changed ROM hacking forever, unquote. There was a challenge of sustaining it as it grew from an unknown fledgling site to an infinitely growing and globally known one, and mounting copyright and takedown pressures. He also acknowledged, quote, the need for the site has lessened over the time. There are now many options for community discussions, open source projects, and file storage across the internet, unquote. So basically what he's saying is, you don't need our forums anymore. You have Discord, which frankly kind of sucks nowadays. Is, you know, because Discord's not as easily searchable and find, you know, like we shut down our forums in favor of Discord as well. But I'm not going to say it was really the best choice long term. It was great short term. It was a great short term solution, but I don't know if the long term solution is going to be that great, because if Discord goes out of business or we close it down, we lose all that stuff. He also mentioned, Nightcrawler also said that there were, you know, people who were trying to dox him and plot against him and all that stuff. And that's part of what he was writing. But one long-time ROMHacking.net member and veteran localizer who goes by the alias Gideon G disputed his versions of the events that led to the site's closure in a lengthy thread over on Twitter, formerly or X, formerly known as Twitter. Gideon G said that Nightcrawler stubbornly refused help in offloading the work and expense of running ROMHacking.net. Gideon G also denied accusations that staff working for the site doxed or threatened the site administrator. Because it was like we offered to help, you know, him put the files on AWS, and he didn't want to do it because, like, unfortunately, when there's one person with the keys to the castle, you've got to convince that person to do things. And what it sounds like is Nightcrawler was like, I don't want to do that, and I'm going to take my ball and go home. And the Breakman says, seriously, why are people so quick to do things like doxing people? Why is gamers so angry? What has basically been said is that he wasn't doxed. He just said he was doxed. And what it might have been something more like, hey, we're trying to figure out, you know, how we can help. And, you know, maybe if there's like physical stuff that we can help move, like, you know, maybe we can get out there. And they probably were like, hey, you know, trying to figure out where you're located. And Tim, you're trying to dox me because you're trying to figure out where I live. So, you know, basically it's a he said, she said. The people that Nightcrawler, the site administrator, has claimed, doxed him, have said, no, we didn't dox him. But Nightcrawler knows that if you say, oh, they tried to dox me, people like Breakman in our chat will be like, well, oh, well, there it is. They doxed him, so, you know, it's over. But it's, and Breakman is wisely saying, I'm staying out of this. Yes, I'm trying to stay out of it, too. I'm just doing, like, this is what one side said, this is what the other side said, and the site's closed. And it seems dysfunctional on multiple sides. And I think there was a community that came out around ROMHacking.net that wanted to take the site to the next level and have it continue with modern web, because I think ROMHacking is still running on code from 15 years ago. I don't know what that's like to have a website that was built in 2012 and not updated since. I wouldn't know anything about that. Moving on. I think he actually had a team of people that were like, look, we can take this over. We can even pay for it. We can do all this stuff so you don't have to pay for it. And instead of accepting their help, Nightcrawler decided he was just going to, you know, close up shop. And there was another site recently that kind of went through the same thing, except the owner decided, hey, sure, here's the help. Overclock Remix. Overclock Remix was owned and operated and founded by DJ Pretzel, and DJ Pretzel finally allowed other some members of his community to take over the site, and they started basically making it even better and like started approving new songs and stuff. And so DJ Pretzel did the right thing for the community, whereas Nightcrawler kind of hasn't. Questbridge says, as a side note, Gideon G was also a part of Aeon Genesis, a very old and renowned fan translation group with a lot of unofficial English patch releases over the years. I believe they did the Live Alive fan translation, because I believe that was their logo at the beginning of that. It was the Aeon Genesis logo. Speaking of Overclock Remix, we are going to take a quick music break, and then we will see what's going to be going on OLR. After this. But yes, we're going to play something from Overclock Remix in the music break. You won't hear it on the podcast. It's more for me to rest my voice for about a couple minutes, and then we'll talk about more things. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show. You're in the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Thank you.
This is Commodore Lawson of the LTE Bridge, and you're participating with the Bobby Black Wolf Show.
We're talking about sports in chat, and I did not want to talk about sports tonight, but we're doing it, and we're not going to talk about it here on the show. Hey, that bumper is was filmed at Dragon Con, and guess what is at the end of the month? Dragon Con. It's in a couple weeks, and that was LTE Bridge. They are bringing Artemis back to Dragon Con. They are also bringing the other, and I can't remember what it's called, but they're having four bridges. They're going to have two bridges of Artemis, the spaceship simulator, which is essentially the Star Trek LARP. If you played Star Trek Bridge Crew, that was the AAA version of what Artemis has been doing forever and ever. But they're also bringing in Artemis's competitor in the open source indie space. And they're bringing their own setup, and they're going to have two bridges. So there's going to be four. There's going to be four bridges going on at Dragon Con. I believe you can already sign up right now, or maybe you start signing up next week. But if you're going to be at Dragon Con, it's going to be great. And we have announced. I'm not going to announce what I'm doing there, other than being on a couple panels on the digital media track that we've been a part of for a while. Rob and I did get promoted up to being main stage moderator, and I do know a little bit of what I'm doing, but nothing is set in stone. We have been asked not to mention it, or not to actually state what we are doing. We're allowed to say that we're doing things, but what it is, because everything's changing. Things have changed for me in the past week. I was like, oh man, that's going to be so. Oh, I'm not doing that one anymore. Okay, so Dragon Con's going to be great. For us, you can find me on the digital media track as well as in some other things going on around Dragon Con. So, this is the year. If you've ever wanted to go to Dragon Con, this probably might be the year, to go and support those of us here on the Voice of Geeks Network. So, stay tuned for more for that. We'll probably know I'll be able to tell you what I'm actually doing in about 2 weeks. Because that's when the initial schedule goes out on the app, and that's when I'm allowed to say stuff. But until then, I'm excited. I'm excited for me. I'm excited for Rob, because I know what Rob's doing, too. He can't tell you either, but I know what we're going to be doing, and it's great. But being a part of some more of the main programming at Dragon Con, it's going to be a great thing for us. And hopefully for the people that get to see us. Mike Def says, we are all excited, we just can't hide it. Actually, no, we're excited, and we can hide it, because I believe the quote was, we'd be sorry to see you go, but we can't have anything getting out before it's announced. Like, that was kind of the way it was, like, we'd be really sorry to kick you out and ban you, but we'd do it. So we're going to actually respect that, and we've always been good with respecting that. Those type of things here at the Voice of Geeks Network. ZenMonkey11 says, the other bridge sim is Starship Horizons. It's awesome. Only one game copy needed. And that is the other one. Now, Artemis also, I believe, is only one game copy needed as well. But Starship Horizons and Artemis, they're kind of like, you know, yin and yang. So I think they're like against, you know, they compete against each other, but also, you know, in this case, they're working together. So, yeah, Starship Horizons is the other bridge. So, Dragon Con's going to have two bridges of Artemis and two bridges of Starship Horizons. I believe it's the same group that is at Gen Con this weekend that does Starship Horizons. They're coming down to Dragon Con, and they're going to be bringing the Starship Horizons bridge that they have at Gen Con. They're bringing it down to Dragon Con. So, coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do, and we like to check in with them. And they are actually going to have, we are going to actually have an OLR tonight. It's going to be great. Had some time off, but we'll try and check in with Sacramento. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well. So how was No Man's Sky? Because that's what last time we talked, you were, yes, about to try the Worlds expansion, or like, and not, yes, the expedition, but the new content.
Yes.
And you did it here on Vogue, but I wanted to hear again from you now that you've had like a week to percolate on it. What do you think of what No Man's Sky is like now?
Well, I felt we had a good time here on this feed. You know, it really was unfortunate that there was no OLR, but, you know, sometimes luck just deals you a crappy hand. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, you know, it's just kind of what has been happening to us this July between, you know, me being sick and the Loki being sick and so forth. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we made the best of it. And so we did some No Man's Sky. And I think the funniest thing about that whole stream was just the amount of paradise planets that were spawning.
Yes.
Considering that I did not start in a universe that was supposed to up the number of those, because those of you that are watching, we only, you know, we played the very beginning of the game for about 2.5 hours. And, you know, so you only got to see basically up to the part where I was actually going to new galaxies. And in the two galaxies we visited, we had 3 paradise planets. That's mm-hmm. unheard of for me. I usually have to hunt around a while to find one. So that was pretty wild. Although I will say the paradise planet in the first galaxy, I didn't think was that much of a paradise. You know, sometimes you still have to hunt around for the right one. The algorithm leads to lots of variance within those different labels. But anyway, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds for those of you that aren't as into No Man's Sky, but it was a lot of fun to play. Definitely was noticing some of the graphical upgrades, especially when it came to the water. Mm-hmm. Water looked gorgeous. I hadn't seen the new bases, technically was the last patch they did. Mm-hmm. But I think even you were commenting on chat like, whoa, this looks way different. And yeah, that threw me at first too, because I forgot that, they changed. Because I was always like, okay, you dock on a new star base, go to the left, get your jetpack upgrade. It's like, wait, I don't know
where it is.
Here. What's this? Yeah. What is this? Chat in the comments, in the chat, Breakman says it was pretty. Yeah, you know, because I was playing it in 4K, basically downsampling to 1080. That looks really good when you can take, you know, that image and downsample mm-hmm. it down for the feed. And yeah, it was really pretty to watch. So yeah.
It made me want to go back and play it. Because I had gone off for longer than you have, because it was like once they did the combat upgrade, I was like, all right, I'm out. And then they added in all the modifications where you could mm-hmm. really customize your game experience.
I went out of my way to demo the various customization features so that Bobby Black Wolf would know there's a safe. He can make the Bobby Black Wolf mode of his dreams. Mm-hmm.
You're back now. Hopefully,
yes, we're back tonight. All three of us are here.
Was there good news this week in the gaming industry?
I don't know. I'm not sure there has been. I think you hit on most of it. And, you know, because we've been out for 2 weeks, we want to hit on a couple stories, big headlines that have come up from last week as well, just because this week was also a little slow, which is another odd thing, Bobby. You know, you've been doing this a long time like we have. What is it about this year where it feels like the news is really slow? And I'm trying to figure out, like, is that just because of the absence of an E3? Or even, you know, I mean, E3 has been gone a while, but like now we all know it's never coming back.
Yeah.
So maybe that's just changing the news cycle a little bit. Like, I don't know. I'm having a hard time figuring it out. But obviously, you know, there was bad news last week that we're going to get into mm-hmm. tonight. And since you already talked about it on your show, I'll just mention like the voice actors going on strike, which, you know, and I say that as bad thing because it stinks that they had to go on strike because somebody out there mm-hmm. thinks voice acting AI is a good idea and a great way to save money, which obviously we all know is your show would say hogwash. So I don't know. I'm looking at the headlines. I'm not sure any of this is good news tonight. We have layoffs at another mm-hmm. company. I don't think you got into tonight. I may have. I had a special guest here at the house that mm-hmm. I'll talk about at the beginning, so I might have missed it. But Bungie had layoffs this week as well. We'll talk about that, which stinks. An exploit was used in Nintendo World Championships to cheat at it. Like, I'm looking at this news and I'm like,
but Mike Tyson's Punch Out is there.
That Mike Tyson's Punch Out is there. I do have one good headline. I have one good headline, Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
The Civilization 7 gameplay showcase is in about 3 weeks.
All right.
So there you go. Something to look forward to.
And Darksoccer says going to talk California Extreme. So that's good.
That is good. That is good news.
That is very good news. Yeah. One day.
Yeah, thank gosh for retro games. Thank gosh for being able to go back and play old games, which, you know, is why, you know, the news about ROMhacking.net is sad, but also like, okay, at least everything's not getting deleted. They got the Internet Archive and that type of stuff. So, you know, we won't lose it, but it is, you know, is still sad. I'm sure kind of like you were talking about there, like it will probably take a different form and be a new website. Like the community is not going to go away, but certainly a, you know, a cornerstone of that scene, you know, closing is sad news, but, you know, making classic games playable sometimes. Big deal, right? Didn't romhacking.net do the ET thing to make that?
I think it
playable?
Was a user on ET that like that went in, did all like the bug fixes that Howard Scott Warshaw wanted to do, but didn't have the time.
Yeah.
Because there, you know, that was even in the ET documentary. It was like Howard Scott Warshaw actually met that homebrew developer.
Oh, wow.
I
didn't see that.
Yeah. And they actually like he went through and like the developer's like, yeah, this is what I fixed. He's like, that's exactly what I wanted to fix. Like Howard Scott Warshaw's like, if I had the time, this is what I would have done. If I had longer than 6 weeks.
That's a bummer.
So.
And even more cocaine to keep me going. Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
The Breakman says, were there still holes? Yes, but they were fixed. It was easier to get in and out of them.
Yeah.
That was like one of the main bugs that was fixed. And Howard Scott Warshaw's like, yeah, that's exactly how I would have fixed it. Like, this is what I would have done. It was kind of his thing. And Clawstorm in chat does say Game Informer shut down. Yeah, that was the first thing I talked about. But here's the thing, maybe, because you were like, there's not that much news. There's not that many trusted news sites anymore that game companies trust. Because this is what, like, I know you weren't here in the beginning, but to kind of summarize, is that I kind of said, you know, Game Informer still hired people that, like, went to journalism in school. And they were one of the last places that did. And so that's why, like, Square Enix trusted them with the cover story for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, because Square Enix doesn't trust that much American media of today. But they did trust Game Informer, and a lot of companies trusted Game Informer, and that's where we would get the news from them. But now that, you know, most places that are media don't have, like, journalism and journalistic integrity, they're influencers. And so there's a lot less now. It's, you know, yes, they'll still talk to them, but it's more like a paid commercial. If you're doing a sponsored stream, that's a paid commercial. It's not a critique. It's not journalism or anything like that, which is fine. And that's what a lot of people want to see is, you know, sponsored streams like that. But that maybe that's why we're not getting as much news, because there's not many places where the news can come out anymore.
You know, supporting that theory even further, you have all the internet websites out there that, you know, and they may have great staff and talented staff and educated staff that are writing for them. But unfortunately, you know, because of money and Google search optimization, you know, maybe they're getting to do a third news articles, but then they have to do guides and, you know, the more evergreen content and things. I just want to be clear, not that there's necessarily anything wrong with guides, but it's a bummer when it takes away from.
Yeah.
You know, what we would rely on those websites for. So
I think that may be part of it, why we're not getting as much news, because there's not that many news websites or news places anymore. There's a few, but there's not as many as there were just 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, game companies, you know you can trust us here at VogNetwork.com, because you know Bobby is holding a secret right now.
Yes.
So we'll keep your secrets, folks.
Yeah. I've been good at holding secrets. It's just, you know.
I know, you have.
It's just they also need the biggest bang for their buck. And, like, also one of the things I said earlier is because I'm not angry. That's why one person in the past has told me the reason I'm not more popular is because I'm not angry enough. And I'm like, you know what? That's fine. I'd rather take the little number that we have here than be big and famous and just, you know, because I'm angry.
But notice how our audience that we do have that listens is pretty darn mature.
Yeah.
Once in a while, we get a nerd that comes in here that we have to, you know, eject. But for large and by and large, we have a pretty mature community. I think there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And it's not just the ages.
Yeah. They're all like, sure. Or, I give our audience more credit than our audience gives themselves.
Yeah, me too.
So, I guess anything else you want to bring up about Olar? I know you mentioned all the stuff that you're going to be talking about tonight.
Please refer to the above post.
Yep. We did things a little out of order. But anyway, Orange Lounge Radio is finally back tonight.
We're here.
Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us. Interact with the show directly. You can also find me on social medias at Bobby Blackwolf or at BobbyBlackwolf.com, where the skies are blue, or really on our Discord server, VogNetwork.com/Discord. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make all this work without the people who go above and beyond. And it's even more special now, considering that the prices have gone up on Twitch for subscriptions. So you being here is really all we ask. But thank you so much to Fifth Dream for resubscribing, who said, "I have nothing especially witty to say this time, but you know what? You are here. And that is very much appreciated. Thank you so much. I'm going to hit the button that gets me out of here so OLR can start. And so I can hear about California Extreme. That's what it is. I want to hear about pinball. And that, you know, that'll make me happy. I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.